Malolele, you're listening to Pacific Waves from RNZ Pacific ko Kuingoa ko Koroi Hawkins. Coming up first.
As many Pacific voices as can be present is very important.
The Pacific Conference of Churches says its vital Pacific voices are heard at COP26 in Glasgow.
Prior to the pandemic, I actually assumed that my business was about 50% local.
We hear how online business is keeping a Cook Islands craft shop afloat, and we have a roundup of a busy week for Pacific sports. The General Secretary of the Pacific Conference of Churches, James Bhagwan, says its vital Pacific voices are heard at the UN's Climate Change Conference in Glasgow, which begins at the end of this month. The conference, also known as COP26, is billed as the most important climate meeting since Paris in 2015, when countries reached the landmark agreement to try to limit the increase in global temperatures to 1.5 degrees Celsius. Reverend Bhagwan is in Germany en route to Glasgow, and he spoke with Moira Tuilapa-Taylor about the importance of the Pacific having a physical presence at the climate conference.
We recognize that this year will be quite a challenging COP, particularly because of travel restrictions within the context of COVID-19. There are a number of Pacific Island delegations that aren't able to attend. As many Pacific voices as can be present is very important, particularly as we continue to ask countries to commit to the Paris rulebook, to, you know, affirm and really make those commitments start to happen in terms of sticking to 1.5 degrees. You know, committing to the issue around climate financing, loss and damage, and all these issues that really, while they may seem abstract for some or seem as challenging commitments, in terms of their national politics and policies, are a matter of life and death for us in the Pacific. And so we'll be working with the World Council of Churches. We'll be working with the faith communities that are going to be present in Glasgow, with whatever civil society, and with our Pacific governments as well, to ensure that in every space we are ensuring the Pacific voice is heard.
Because this meeting is really crucial for the Pacific, isn't it, this COP26?
Yes, absolutely. As I mentioned, there's a number of key issues which we need to happen, the Pacific governments are doing their best to push that agenda. We're also seeing the oceans pathway hopefully come into the UNFCCC, which is so important for us of the Pacific. We're there to support. We're there to continue to raise advocacy and ensure that as much as possible, we get some real traction and move beyond the rhetoric that we often hear at these meetings or in the build-up to these meetings, and actually get clear timelines, clear commitments on how we're going to move forward as one planet.
And in terms of, can you tell me how many of you are there that will go on to Glasgow?
Well, I'm traveling for a number of meetings on the way, because we recognize the challenge of traveling under the impact of COVID-19 is quite limiting, and also in terms of trying to reduce my own carbon emissions. So having all the meetings during the one trip, I will be joined from the Pacific Conference of Churches by one of our young climate justice advocates. We know that there are a few other Pacific Island civil society representatives from the Pacific Islands Climate Action Network and others who are hoping to get to Glasgow. As I mentioned, it's very difficult for people to get there. We note that there are a number of Pacific Island countries that won't be represented by their government so much as people are not able to leave their islands, but who are then relying on representatives from the UN in New York. So they're permanent representatives and ambassadors either from New York or from the UK, will be attending to negotiate on their behalf.
You're talking about some of the climate action that you'll be taking. So I know that there is climate action kicking off in Fiji this weekend from Sunday.
Yes, our Pacific Conference of Churches has partnered with a global movement called Green Faith, which is an interreligious movement calling for the end of fossil fuels. And so our activities this weekend will be with our member churches based in Fiji to unfurl banners in their places of worship or in their larger places of worship, to remind our Pacific governments to continue the call, to know that we are supporting them, but also to send to a larger, as a larger message to the larger countries, particularly those who are very strong in production of fossil fuel and carbon emissions, in particular the United States of America and much closer to home, Australia. And so there are joint actions being taken in Fiji and in Australia and other places with our partners on this to raise awareness and to basically start that call to remind people as we're journeying to COP26, what are the issues at stake? And one of them is that we need to shift from fossil fuel, and we need to do that urgently.
The COVID-19 pandemic has cut off much-needed tourism revenue for many Pacific Island countries, especially those heavily reliant on the sector, such as Fiji, Vanuatu, Samoa and the Cook Islands. But online marketing has proved to be a lifeline for many businesses across the region, even with the constraints on supply chains. Joining me is Fletcher Melvin, the former chair of the Cook Islands Chamber of Commerce and owner-operator of Island Craft, who's kindly agreed to share a bit of his own experience during the pandemic. Kia rana, Fletcher. Let's start at the beginning. What were your expectations when borders around the world started closing to try and limit the spread of COVID-19?
Prior to the pandemic, I actually assumed that my business was about 50% local and 50% tourism. And I thought, you know, it'll be bad, but, you know, we'll get local customers in and it'll be fine. Really wrong assumption. I mean, the longest we've ever been locked down is probably about a month, and that was after a cyclone. So, you know, we bounced back pretty quickly after that. So when the borders closed and there were no more tourists, we found out it was closest to 70% of our business was tourism-based. But also, the other percentage is still made up of people that themselves rely on tourism. And thankfully, the government came in and came in with wage subsidy, and there are still people who have 40% still have some money to spend.
Yeah, no, that is, I guess, as well, you know, that domestic market, as well as you're saying there, relies on people having money themselves from working in the tourism industry.
Well, that's right. I think, you know, the statistics are, we say it's about 67% of our GDP. For me, the rest of the money is made up really of a small percentage coming from the financial offshore industry, a very small amount. And the rest, I can't see where the rest would come from. There's some licensing for fishing boats, about $9 million a year. But, you know, the government revenue is derived primarily from tourism. So, you know, we are living off the savings, the government savings, and any borrowing or grants that the New Zealand government has given us. So it is, everything is tourism.
Definitely. Now, the reason I've called you today is to talk a little bit about, we've been looking at businesses around the region and just seeing how they're coping and how they're having to change. And I understand you've had to do some digital adaptation as well to get by.
Yeah, so, you know, online has always been, I've always known that we needed to go online. Most businesses try to have a website, a bit of Facebook presence, online presence. But as soon as the pandemic happened and our border closed, we had to go, everything, the only way we were going to get some outside money was to ramp up our website and our Facebook presence, Instagram presence. So I've got 29 staff, and I moved 5 of them onto full-time online, getting digital, getting advertising done, getting products photos taken, revamping our website, taking old stock off, and really trying to figure out a way that we can export around the world, which was really tough as well because we went from 20, I think it was the higher 26 flights to one flight a week. So, you know, we still have an issue. People want to order, but we only have one flight to get it out. So, you know, we've had to tell people that as long as you're prepared to wait and that it's not urgent, we can send you product.
Yeah, was the response to that sort of more strategy towards online immediate?
I mean it was interesting because a lot of Cook Islanders started ordering from us, really to support to start with as well. So they were really good. Cook Islanders living overseas, they would we have a flower shop as well as a souvenir shop. We also have a craft workshop, and what people were doing was ordering flowers, for instance, to be sent to their, to their loved ones here, to their family, what we did is offer gift baskets, and people were just be sending, people here gifts just to get their spirits up. So that was a real big help. A lot more people in New Zealand, Australia had more time, I guess, to order custom-made crafts from us. And one of the big ones is things like 21st gifts, birthday gifts. If they wanted wooden, keys or wooden gift boxes, jewelry boxes or mirrors, stuff like that. And so that's really picked up as well. And I think it's because people are getting online and they're able to get things that they've always wanted to try out. And they have more time on their hands. They may be sitting at home and thinking, well, I got a bit of time to organize this, to talk to this customer, company about creating something for myself. And so that's been a big lift in business. And, there's other products that, like, we make soap, coconut oil soap, and we're finding that people were buying that and trying that out. Yeah, so we have people online communicating through Facebook, and what we can do is sit down with them and show them the piece that we were thinking of. They can show us the design. We can get back to them with our own design and do some real bespoke style crafts and gifts for them.
That's cool. That's good. Nice to hear people sort of giving back, and also in reaching out to support people back home, also helping business. So that's really, really great to hear. Tell us a bit more about your website and where people can find you and what you're offering as well.
Sure. Okay. Our website is called allencraft.com. And we've been around. We was the oldest retail and manufacturing company in the Cook Islands. So, come and check us out. We've got nearly 80 years of experience with Cook Island crafts, Polynesian crafts. So we can make things for you from our factory. We've got, 9 full-time carvers that can make anything, pretty much anything you can think of. We will give it a go and do something special for you. So look at our website, www.islandcraft.com, and check out all the things we make. But also find us on Facebook just reach out, have a look at the things we make. But don't be shy to ask us about things that are not featured on there and that we might be able to make for you, because there hasn't been a request yet that we haven't tried to fulfill. So, I encourage people to reach out, see us, try something unique, and you'll be helping people in the Cook Islands, our company and people like us to survive a bit longer while we wait for tourism. And hopefully we'll keep our fans and grow the business, grow the online side, one way of diversifying our company and our economy as well.
Mate, Taki Fletcher, and hopefully some of your fans will get to visit you at the shop if the bubble reopens soon as well.
Absolutely, and I hope to see you here one day as well. It's going to be, we need everybody to come visit. And, we're thinking it's going to be the next few months, best case scenario. We'll have everybody getting vaccinated and getting ready. And thanks a lot for the opportunity to showcase our business.
All good, man. Maitake.
Maitake, maitake.
It's been quite a busy week for sports in the Pacific. Papua New Guinea are making history as the first ever Pacific Islands country to take part in a T20 World Cup. Fiji's national sevens coach has announced his resignation, and the much-awaited playing roster for new Super Rugby Pacific side Moana Pacific is finally being drip-fed to us. With me is our sports reporter, Vinnie Wiley. Kia ora and welcome. Let's start with PNG in Oman and the significance of them just being part of a T20 World Cup.
Well, it's I guess this is what Papua New Guinea have been waiting for many a years, competing in a World Cup. Of course, it was meant to happen last year in Australia, but COVID got in the way, so the World Cup initially got moved to India, and then COVID wasn't good up there either, so now we find ourselves in Oman and the UAE. So they will kick off their T20 Men's World Cup campaign against the hosts, Oman, this Sunday. They're playing in the first round or the preliminary round. They're in the same group as Oman, Bangladesh and Scotland. And the top two from that group, as well as another group of four, will go into the main draw. So they probably need to win two out of three games if they wanted to go through to that main draw. And the obvious candidates would be Oman and Scotland, keeping in mind Bangladesh recently thumped New Zealand in the limited overs game. And I think they beat Australia, and you know they're improving markedly in recent times. It'll be a pretty tough ask. They lost to Sri Lanka on Thursday. They also lost to Ireland earlier this week in their two warm-up matches in T20. They've actually been over in Oman for the best part of 6 weeks, playing a whole bunch of games, and they've struggled. They've lost a whole bunch of one-day games and World Cup qualifiers against the likes of Scotland and Oman as well. And yeah, they found it pretty tricky, but T20 is their strength. That's where they are strongest. They've got a lot of experienced players, like their captain, Asad Vala, who scored 51 against Sri Lanka. They'll be hoping guys like him can fire. It's been a long wait for this T20 World Cup. PNG would be the rank outsiders. We just hope they can compete, be competitive, do well, maybe win a game. And their coach, Carl Sandry, we spoke to him before they left. This part of the world to go over there. And he said, why can't we be the giant killers? Why can't we be the team that shocks the world? So they're going in there confident and believing that they can do something.
And just to be clear, this is their first T20 World Cup and the first Pacific team in the T20?
Yeah, it's the first time a Pacific Island nation has been in a senior World Cup. So Fiji, a number of years ago, their under-19s went to the World Cup. PNG, this is the men's, the PNG men, have competed at age grade level as well and done very well, and got full one day international status a few years back, which has been huge for them. To compete in a World Cup, be it T20, 50 overs, or there isn't a Test World Cup, there's Test Championship, you know, this is as big as it gets for them. So yeah, this is a huge achievement, and you know the way cricket has developed in PNG, it's been a slow, organic sort of steady rise. They put a lot of investment in there. Their CEO, Greg Campbell, and they've had some very good coaches over the years. Andy Bickle, former Australian fast bowler. Recently, Joe Dawes, another Australian who left earlier this year. Deepak Patel, the former black cap spinner. So yeah, they've had a really strong group of people going through there, working hard, and obviously some talented players as well.
Awesome. And we'll keep an eye on that going in next week as well. Rugby... sevens rugby, to be specific, Gareth Baber.
Yeah, he's stepped down from the Fiji sevens coaching position. I guess not long, a couple of months after they won, or 3 months after they won their Olympic gold medal. I'd say it was expected. His contract was up at the end of the year. He's going to actually leave a month early at the end of November. I think just to give himself a little bit more time. He's back in the UK with his family. After the Delta outbreak in Fiji. At Easter, they all went into a bubble, so I think his family may or may not have already been home by that point, but all the players and staff and whatnot were basically away from their loved ones for so long. So after the Olympics, he went straight back to the UK to see his family. The players, obviously, are back in Fiji. The reality is that if he was going to stay on, he probably would have had to stay on until the next Olympics in Paris in 2024, and Fiji Rugby offered him a contract to do that because the guy won a gold medal, fair enough. But he's obviously had to think about things and thought, well, you know, I've achieved this. I won a gold medal. He came into a team that was the Olympic champions and he retained that. It's a pretty high threshold. He says he really wants to get back to coaching in 15s. He's loved his time in 7s. He's a 7s man at heart, but he has coached previously at 15s. He had a stint as a co-coach of Cardiff, and of course he played professionally himself, so he wants to upskill and become a better 15-a-side rugby coach and see what he can do in that side of the game. And he was asked if, you know, would he want to come back and coach the Flying Fijians or coach the Fijian and Drua one day, and he said absolutely. But, you know, he said, you know, I've done good things in 7s, but I know I've got a lot to learn, especially in the 15-a-side game, so I need to find a place, the right project, the right team to try and do that, whether it's as an assistant or a head coach, and come up through the ranks there, and maybe he'll be back one day.
And Super Rugby, Moana Pacifica, finally we're starting to see player names trickle through.
Yes, it's been two very different approaches from Moana Pacifica and the Endrua. The Endrua have been sort of dropping 5 or 6 names every few days. I think they've got maybe 1 or 2 announcements to go before they go into pre-season quarantine and then training. Moana Pacifica told us, you know, a month or more back now that they'd signed 30 players then, as well as having another 15-odd players on standby. So that's basically the bulk of their squad. But up until this week, they hadn't announced any. So Christian Lealeafano, former Wallabies international, played 26 tests, Samoan heritage. He is the star signing. He's 34 years old. The Brumbies wanted him to go back there too. He's a long-time Brumbie, of course, famously was diagnosed with leukemia back in 2016 and recovered from that to play over in Ireland, come back to Australia and also play for Australia and at the World Cup a couple of years ago. So a wonderful story. You know, a lovely guy. That experience will be really important for this Moana Pacifica team because it's going to be predominantly, just like the Endrua, a very young squad. You know, the big name stars that people are probably dreaming of probably aren't going to sign for next year because, you know, it took a long time for these guys to get confirmed. But someone like him with his experience and also that desire to come back and give back to his heritage, give back to the Samoan culture and be a part of something like Moana Pacifica, yeah, should be good.
Yeah, exciting stuff, eh? These teams, I'm keen to see how they go. And Tautai Kefu, we've had some news from him and the family.
Yes, I had a chat to Tautai Kefu this week after Tonga's squad for the end of year tour was named. Now, he is still the head coach, but we reported previously that he won't be travelling over to Europe. Just, of course, he had that attack back in August, home invasion, and he was stabbed, had to undergo surgery. His wife also had her arm injured, and she underwent surgery as well, and a couple of their kids were involved. He said that they're recovering really well. The physical injuries, he said, are pretty much gone. His wife still doesn't have any movement in the arm, and she's just begun therapy on that. So they're hoping that over the next 6 to 12 months, she'll start to get that movement back, hopefully. So they're very optimistic about that. But clearly for him right now, the best thing is to stay home and just continue that recovery, not take it too far. So he selected the squad alongside his assistant coaches for the European Tour, which is very tough because COVID, travel restrictions and everything else. Some of their matches are not in an international window, so they've had to negotiate with clubs to have some of their players released, which is usually something that doesn't go their way, but they say the clubs have been really constructive and helpful. So his assistant coach, Grant Dory, and the former Fiji coach, John McKee, who also used to work in the Tonga rugby crew, you know, a decade or so ago, they're going to be coaching the team over in Europe. Tautai will, you know, speak with the coaching staff most days, have input, but ultimately he says he'll leave it to them on the ground to make those decisions about, you know, match day squads and obviously tactics and that sort of thing. But he'll still be involved and he'll watch some training sessions on film, and of course he'll be on the couch in the middle of the night in Brisbane watching the team play from afar, which he admits is going to be a bit weird. But yeah, he's looking forward to it all the same. And they kick off their tour against Scotland at the end of this month, and then they play England, French Barbarians, Romania. So two Tier 1 test matches, having played the All Blacks earlier this year, in this COVID world especially, you know, some valuable, good quality matches as they look to still try and qualify for the World Cup.
That's Pacific Waves for this week. Remember, you can download us free to your device from Spotify, iHeart or Apple Podcasts. And if you're using Apple, please leave us a rating so others can also find us. Mō mea.